I was in my little office on Main Street in 2007, and Paul, as I was introduced to him, came through the door. Now, we had one desk and a little tiny cubicle on Main Street there, and he sat down. He said, "I want to introduce myself." He did. "I'm from Portland Southeast Calvary Chapel, and I'm just getting ready to go to Germany. I'm going to go to Berlin." He says, "I speak fluent German," and he says, "I feel called there, and I was wondering if you would support me," basically about that. And I had such a draw in my spirit to him. He was just a man that I felt was anointed. I felt that he had a call and a passion. And those of you that know me, I love passion. If you're going to do something, do it. And so he went and he has done it. He's doing it. But yet it's been hard. It's been tough. It's been up and down. It's been a time of carving out a church in a Muslim neighborhood in Berlin. He has a little picture, and I've asked him to send it to us so we can put it on the board. His storefront-like church, it says Jesus House in a Muslim neighborhood. This is a guy that truly does walk the walk of a guy that is called. So I would like to have you come, Paul, and share with us what's on your heart, and we will be blessed by it, I'm sure. Paul.
Good morning. I was Larry didn't tell you, I was here last year, actually.
Yes.
I was here on a Wednesday evening, and I think there was about 10 of you guys there, so... So it's nice to see more of you, actually, this time around. So, and he said, "I'm a member, actually, of Southeast Portland, Calvary Chapel, Southeast Portland." And I don't know if you guys know, the assistant pastor there, Kevin Smith, his parents go in this church, come and attend this church. So wherever you are, there you are. Greetings. So there's a connection. We are kind of bonded already as a group. So we have family here as well. So, you guys can go ahead and turn to Genesis 32 to begin with. Genesis 32, that's what I'm going to be teaching out of today. Should probably put my glasses on so I can read my notes. There's a guy in our church, he loves videos. He loves making videos. He thinks he's going to be a Steven Spielberg of some type one day. The Christian Steven Spielberg, maybe. But he loves making videos, and he, I think, suggested it or whatever, or it was I can't remember exactly. But anyway, we agreed and said, "Hey, how about making a little video that I can show to the people when I'm home?" And he agreed to it, and my opinion, he put too much time into it. I mean, he wanted to make a really special project, and I would have shown that. That's what I was hoping to show you guys, maybe a 10-minute video about our ministry. But in the meantime, he'd always been sick. He'd always been battling allergies. And what it turned out to be is he's got a, did you guys know there's a thymus gland that you have in your body? Thymus gland, I guess. I never knew until he wrote me and said he's got problems with his thymus gland and that it had to be operated and removed. So he's been tied up with that the last couple weeks. So he's been unable to finish the project and finish the video. So I have no video for you guys. So I probably shouldn't have told you that. But anyway. But you know what? I was going to teach anyway, out of the Word, and I think that's just as good or just as important because, if the Spirit talks through me and you guys receive and you guys are blessed by the message, then you'll get a sense of what's maybe taking place in Berlin on every given Sunday, right? So, I mean, there's a connection through the Spirit as well, and so you might get an understanding of how God is using me over there in the way that you maybe receive the message today. So, Genesis 32, it's something that's near and dear to my heart. We as a church are going through the book of Genesis right now, and we had this text about 3, 4, 5 weeks ago, and I thought I would just share it with you. It's Jacob. He wrestles with the angel of the Lord. Maybe you know the story very well. Maybe you don't. I don't know. I hope I do justice to the text today, and that maybe we can learn something from it And I'll start with verse 1 and just read through the text, and then see how the Lord uses it. Verse 1, "Now as Jacob went on his way, the angels of God met him. Jacob said when he saw them, 'This is God's camp.' So he named that place Mahanaim. Then Jacob sent messengers before him to his brother Esau in the land of Seir, in the country of Edom. He also commanded them, saying, 'Thus you shall say to my lord Esau, Thus says your servant Jacob, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed until now. I have oxen and donkeys and flocks and male and female servants, and I have sent to tell my lord that I may find favor in your sight.' The messengers returned to Jacob, saying, 'We came to your brother Esau, and furthermore, he is coming to meet you, and 400 men are with him.' Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed." Now, I think at this point, it might be good, just so you know what's going on, and that maybe we can understand the passage better today, that I give some background to what's going on here. Jacob has just left his Uncle Laban. Uncle Laban lived way in the north, near what's today the Turkish border. And Laban was a treacherous man. Uncle Laban was not a good guy, but Jacob had lived there for 20 years. And you know the story probably just as well as I do, but anyway, he got two wives, Rachel and Leah, got some children, etc. Anyway, like I said, Laban was a difficult uncle, hard to work for. He cheated Jacob numerous times. Despite his efforts to cheat Jacob, the Lord continued to bless Jacob. And so Jacob is now returning. He's leaving. And again, there was a little thing with the gods. Rachel had stolen the gods, and Laban wanted them back. So they had one final confrontation. And they agreed to go their own ways, and he made a pillar, a heap of rocks. And they basically said, this is the border. You know, Laban said, I'm going to stay on this side, the northern side. You stay on the southern side, Jacob. Is it agreed? They agreed. In other words, we're not going to cross over each other's side. And, you know, whatever happens, if we should cross over the other side, that's not on me then. So in other words, you better stay on your side. I'll stay on my side. So he's got that on his backside, in other words. So on his backside, there's no escape. And he's going forward, and he gets the news now that Esau's coming. And it says there's 400 men with Esau. And it says he's greatly afraid and distressed. Why? Because he has not seen his brother in 20 years. This is Esau, whom he hasn't seen in 20 years. They left on bad terms. He had stolen his brother's blessing. You know that story maybe very well. Father Isaac got defrauded by his own son Jacob. Father Isaac wanted to give the blessing to Esau, and then Jacob just got in there in between, just in time, so to speak, deceived his father and received the blessing that should have been for Esau. At least that's what Father Isaac wanted to do. And so Jacob got it. Esau comes back. He finds out the news that the blessing has been stolen, and he is mad at Jacob. And that's when mom, Rebecca, says, hey, you go to the north country, you go to my uncle, and you just stay there for a while. And as soon as things cool down, I'll send for you. She never sent for him. Things never cooled down. It turned out to be 20 years. In other words, that was the last time that Jacob saw his mom alive. Neither one of them knew it. Neither one would know that this is the last time they see each other. So he's running for his life, actually, Jacob. He heads up north to Uncle Laban's place, because here's what Esau said. Esau said that as soon as our dad is dead, I'm going to kill you. And that's the last thing he's got in his head, Jacob. And that's the thing he remembers. That's the last thing he remembered hearing from Esau. And now he gets a new news that Esau's coming towards him with 400 men. That's a little army. And he is greatly distressed and afraid. In other words, he's fearing for his life. I don't know if you guys have ever been in that position. I've been in maybe mild situations like that, mildly distressed compared to being distressed for your life. But that's Jacob's situation, and that's what he's coming up against, so to speak. And the news here, if you notice, is neutral, right? It just says Esau's coming, and there's 400 men with him. Doesn't say anything. He's mad. He just can't wait to see you because he's going to kill you. Or it doesn't say also the other flip side. Doesn't say, oh, he's already forgiven you. Everything's good. It's neutral. He doesn't know. He just has a memory of Esau, what he said, and that is, I will kill you as soon as our father is dead. And so this is, yeah, continuing verse 7 then, to see how things now play out. And, yeah, what happens to Jacob, we'll continue in verse 7. And he divided the people who were with him, and the flocks and the herds and the camels into two companies. For he said, if Esau comes through the one company and attacks it, then the company which is left will escape. Jacob said, O God, now he's praying, O God of my father Abraham, and God of my father Isaac, O Lord, who said to me, return to your country and to your relatives, and I will prosper you. I am unworthy of all the loving kindness and of all the faithfulness which you have shown to your servant. For with my staff only I crossed this Jordan, and now I have become two companies. Wow, that's, if you've been following the story about Jacob, if you read the whole book of Genesis, you know, this is kind of a new page, a new beginning for Jacob. He says, I am unworthy of all the loving kindness and of all the faithfulness which you have shown to your servant. In a certain way, for the first time, he's recognizing, God, you're the one who's responsible for everything. You've given everything that I have here. He says, I came over across the Jordan the first time without just with a staff, and now I'm returning with all the kinds of possessions. I have wives, I have sons, I have herds. And it's a very important turn in his life, so to speak. He's beginning to change, because Jacob was always a guy beforehand that, you know, if he saw something he wanted, he would go and get it, so to speak. And he would do whatever it took to get it. I mean, you guys know the story, the birthright. You know, he's ready. Sure, I got a porridge. He's ready to buy the birthright. You know, whatever you need. Are you hungry? Here you go. Here's a bowl of soup, so to speak. And then the blessing. He connived his way into getting the blessing. He saw Rachel, a beautiful woman, and he wants her. And he's willing to just work for free for 7 years. You know, whatever it takes. In other words, he's going to do whatever it takes in his own ability to get what he wants. And he continues here in verse 11, though, with his prayer to the Lord. He says, deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau. See, he knows exactly what's going down. For I fear him that he will come and attack me and the mothers with the children. For you said, I will surely prosper you and make your descendants as the sand of the sea, which is too great to be numbered. So he spent the night there. And then the next verses, I won't read them, but just for the sake of time, what Jacob now does, he arranges for 5 groups of gifts to send in advance to his brother Esau, who's coming towards him. So he sends 5 groups, goats, sheep, camels, cows, and donkeys in 5 stages. In other words, Esau is supposed to come and receive the first drove. They would call it a drove, goats. You know, oh, what is this? This is a gift from Jacob, it would be said. And then he continues, and then the next sheep. Oh, what is this? Oh, this is another gift from Jacob. So in other words, he's buttering him up. He's really trying to mollify him. He's trying to, like, hey, maybe. And that's exactly what he says in verse 20. He says, I will appease him. Jacob is speaking about his brother. I will appease him, mollify, placate him, in other words. I will appease him with the present that goes before me. Then afterward, I will see his face. Perhaps he will accept me. See, he's trying to, like, hopefully I can buy him out, so to speak. Hopefully I can influence him. That's Jacob again at work. He's greatly distressed, but he's always thinking. He's always thinking of a way out of this situation. And now he's going, like, I don't care. I'll just give him enough gifts, and hopefully that will placate him. And he's hoping that it'll work. Maybe it will work, he says. Verse 21, we're just going to jump forward then and continue. So the present passed on before him. That's the 5 herds of animals passed on before him while he himself spent that night in the camp. Now he arose that same night and took his 2 wives and his 2 maids and his 11 children and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. Then he took them and sent them across the stream, and he sent across whatever he had. Jacob, in a certain sense, for the first time, is just letting go. He's sending everybody across the Jabbok. That's a river that feeds into the Jordan. It's a river that is east of the Jordan. If you know the Jordan, it runs north and south. And the Jabbok runs from the east into the west, into the Jordan. So it's a smaller river. And he's camped there. But he's now sent everything over the Jabbok in terms of the direction south, so to speak, and he remains on the northern side of the river, and that's where he's remaining, but he's let go. He says everything, whatever he sent across, whatever he had, all his possessions, and it's a very vulnerable moment now for Jacob. I mean, I think we all like our little support mechanisms. We like our support group around us. None of us like to be alone. And he's really letting go. And he's coming towards his brother Esau. And it's a very vulnerable position right now for everybody. And he stays back alone, so to speak. He's committing whatever he has. He's committing to fate. He is now at the mercies of God. It's not the old Jacob who could always kind of figure a way around. He's still conniving. He's still scheming things out. But he's really, literally at this point now in his life where he's like, he's alone. It's just me and the Lord, so to speak. And lo and behold, it is just he and the Lord. As we read in verse 24, then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. Now, here with the pronouns, you got to follow the pronouns. Verse 25, when he, that is the man, or the angel of the Lord, saw that he had not prevailed against him, that would be Jacob, he touched the socket of his thigh, so the socket of Jacob's thigh was dislocated when he wrestled with him. A man wrestled with Jacob all night. And now people are like, who is that guy? You know, I mean, Jacob basically says it's God. He says it in the next verses. That is God that with whom he wrestled. And some people believe it's Jesus in bodily form and appearance. They call it, I forgot what they call it, Christophanies, appearances of Jesus Christ in the Old Testament. There's numerous places where people surmise it's Jesus Christ. Basically God in bodily form. And God just limited himself. He became a man, so to speak. He appeared as a man before Jacob, and he wrestled with him. And he wrestled with him all night, it says. You know, Jacob was a driven man. Jacob, he would always strive. Up to this point, he had not striven with God, but he had striven against God. You know, it was all about him. My will, what I see, what I want to do. I have the means. I have the ability. I can do it. I can get there. His own strength, his own abilities, and his own intelligence that got him through. That is what he relied on. And he hadn't released yet. He hadn't yet released everything to God. He hadn't yet let go of everything that he had. And now for the first time, in effect, he's driven into a corner, a situation out of which he can't help himself. He's stuck. You know, that terminology, paint yourself into a corner, right? He's painted himself into a corner. He can't get out. And for his whole life, he had striven to get what he wanted. When opportunity presented itself, he took advantage of it. You know, there's an opportunity. He sees, he goes for it. Whatever, by whatever means, guile, cleverness, whatever he needed or wanted, he would get for himself. And, you know, for this encounter now that he has with the angel of the Lord, with this man with whom he wrestles through the whole night for the first time, if there's anything that it exposes, it is Jacob's independence, his insistence on self-reliance, and a desire to set his own course. You know, why are they wrestling? You know, they're wrestling. If you know anything about the sport, it's my will against the other guy's will. I wrestled 4 years in high school, and it's by far the most difficult sport I ever did. There's something about another guy. He wants to put your back on the mat, and you have the same intention with him. And who's it? It's two wills, right? You know, that's not what wrestling's all about. You going out and laying down for your opponent. You know, that's not how it works. So it's a wrestling of wills, so to speak. And Jacob has to get to that point where he has to learn to give in. He has to give in to the will of God. And it exposes here. See, that's the thing. It exposes his independence, his self-reliance. He goes, no, I want to set my course. And I think we can kind of all relate to that. I think we all struggle in a certain sense. We struggle with the Lord to this day. It doesn't have nothing to do with salvation. It has to do with, you know, me wanting to do the Lord's will. Hey, we're children of God, right? We have children that are born to us. We may even adopt children. But when we adopt them, like God adopted us, they're our children. And then we begin to raise them. And we notice in the raising process, there is sometimes, you know, there's two different wills at work. And we have to teach it to our children. Hey, this is the course that I want you to go. This is the course that's best for you. And we children, we struggle with that. And we struggle with God still to this day. And so he's wrestling here. In verse 26, it continues. They're not done yet. Verse 26, again, now the pronoun. Then he, that would be the man or the angel of God, said, "Let me go, for the dawn is breaking." But he, Jacob, said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." So he said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." He said, "Your name shall no longer be Jacob, but Israel. For you have striven with God." See, here it is. "You have striven with God and with men and have prevailed." Then Jacob asked him and said, "Please tell me your name." But he said, "Why is it that you ask my name?" And he blessed him there. Very key. And he blessed him there. So Jacob named the place Peniel, for he said, "I have seen God face to face, yet my life has been preserved." And there's the indication. Jacob knows who that man was. It was God with whom he was wrestling, eye to eye, face to face. Now the sun rose upon him just as he crossed over Peniel, and he was limping on his thigh. Therefore, to this day, the sons of Israel do not eat the sinew of the hip, which is on the socket of the thigh, because he touched the socket of Jacob's thigh in the sinew of the hip. Something I find pretty interesting is that Jacob would not let go. He's an injured man right now. His hip's been dislocated. I don't know. I'm assuming that was painful. I've never had my hip dislocated, but I think it just sounds very painful, right? And he's clinging. He's clinging unto this angel. And the angel's like, I think he got done with business. You know, first they were kind of like wrestling back and forth. And the angel limited himself, allowed himself to be prevailed upon. But then the angel just reached out and touched his socket, and whoop, he was dislocated. The angel did it in the right spot where it needed to be done. He touched him. I mean, this is God Almighty. I think that's, again, that's a pretty clear indication. He could have touched him in the head, would have crushed his skull, right? Could have touched him anywhere. But Jacob is now clinging. He won't let go. I know that from wrestling, too. It doesn't matter. You can be the bottom guy. You can get pinned. And you can still cling onto your opponent, the guy that pinned you. And you can still not let go. And that's the guy's like, okay, I need to go. And he says, no, I won't let you go until you bless me. Jacob is all about the blessing for some reason. Jacob loves to be blessed. He stole the blessing from his brother. Right? Wasn't that clever how they did it? I'm so fascinated by that story. How he and his mom were able to pull that off. I'm like, wow. I would have loved to have seen that just to see how that worked. Really clever. But what was it, truly a blessing? You know, that term Pyrrhic victory, or another way of saying maybe hollow victory. Maybe we've experienced a hollow victory where we put everything in, all our resources, all our efforts. We fight, we scheme, we get what we want. But then you're going like, why did I bother? You know, you got everybody upset maybe around you. You made some enemies in the process. Because you got what you wanted, right? But in the end of the day, was it any worth it? Was it worth anything? I mean, that's, I think, what Jacob found out real quick. He had to run for his life. He would never see his mother again. That's some of the costs he had to carry. So what? He had the father's blessing, but now there's anger in the family. There's separation. And there was not much of a blessing there. Then he was blessed materially. I mean, he just said it himself in his prayer. He says, "Lord, you have prospered me. You have given me material wealth." You know the story of Laban and the whole thing with the striped sheep and the speckled and spotted sheep and all that stuff, the goats, you know, and Laban was always changing the terms of the deal and it always worked against him. In other words, he was still being like materially blessed. But Jacob, I think, realized there too, it's not about the material blessing. I mean, he still wants a blessing. And that's what I find so significant about this. He's realized the blessing that he's had so far is insufficient, incomplete. You know, there's a spiritual blessing that waits for all of us, and that is a blessing that is based on a deeper, more intimate, more authentic relationship with God. You know, a blessing that is based on a personal encounter with God, born of a struggle with God in which one's will is ultimately surrendered to the will of God. I think married couples, I think in many ways, know what I'm talking about. The blessing, the true blessing of a marriage is the deeper you go with your spouse, the deeper, the more intimate you get to know her. And sometimes, you know, those relationships are built on crisis or are born or develop through hardship, through difficult times. Couples that go through difficult times are at the end very often much stronger. The crises or the difficulties might even split or break up a marriage, or it might make it stronger. And that's the thing. Something I think as 20 and 30 years go by in a marriage, I think it's not so much anymore the outward appearance like it was the first time you met each other, right? Oh, she's so cute, and oh, he's so witty, and I like the way he looks, and I like the car he's driving. You know, all these things maybe when we're dating, but you know, 20 and 30 years later in the marriage, that stuff doesn't matter anymore. It's like you look at your spouse and you know her or you know him, and that's where the true blessing is, in the relationship that you guys have with one another. You can count on one another. You can depend on one another. And the two of you together, you multiply the relationship. It's like 1 + 1 = 3, right? It's much deeper. And I think that's exactly what Jacob is after, and this is what he's experiencing for the first time, what it means to get to know God, to struggle, to strive against him, and then finally get to the point where you just break down and you say, hey, not my will be done, but your will. Couples, again, married couples, where they merge, the two wills merge together. It's a powerful thing then. And then the marriage is a blessed marriage as well. And you see God here in the form of man. You know, he could not prevail against Jacob until he touched the socket of Jacob's thigh. In other words, he was dislocated. And he hung on, and he wouldn't let go until he blessed him, you know, and that's it. That is exactly what it is, a surrendered life. And a life that is blessed of God is also a life that is often marked by injury or by a wound. With the blessing came the injury. In other words, Jacob was knocked down a couple notches. Jacob now would limp henceforth for the rest of his life because of this encounter. How cool it is, how wonderful maybe we would think it'd be to have this kind of encounter with the Lord. But how many of us want to be injured in the process and carry from the encounter a wound that will stay with us for the rest of our lives? But that's the blessing. There's the blessing. We cannot comprehend that it is by the flaw that we have or the weakness and the impairment that we carry, therein lies the blessing. We all want the blessing. We want God. We cry. I don't know how many times we hear people saying that. May the Lord bless you. We say that as a greeting, right? May the Lord bless you. But are we prepared to receive truly and understand what that means for our lives? We all want to gain that blessing. But do we believe that the very weakness or the infirmity that we carry in us is actually the means by which God can bless us? The common belief that's spread around, and we hear it all over the place, the blessing of God, very clearly, for many people, can only mean one thing. It can mean healing, health, success, abundance, bliss, riches. That's what we think of when we think of the blessings of God. But is there another place that God maybe wants to take us? And that's the state of the church today, I think, at least in the West. The church in the West is blessed in so many ways. We have abundance, man. And, you know, for me to be over in Germany, sometimes I look for resources. I look for books or manuals or something. And it's like almost impossible to find it in German. And sometimes I get the ads all the time from christianbook.com. And they're like looking to throw away stuff. They tell you, mark down 80, 90%, you know. And like, take it. Would somebody please take it? You know, and I just like droves of Bibles, just a Bible for bikers, a Bible for athletes, a biker's women's studies, you name it. I mean, there's just an abundance of riches that actually Americans have, or English-speaking countries in this sense. And it's like, wow. Or the freedom to worship, just come. You don't have to come. You can stay home, like Larry said, now watch it on television, right? And how easy is that? I mean, we have so much abundance, so much blessing. But you know, like even like Jacob was a guy who was blessed materially, like we are in America or even in Western Europe, but still he wanted more. He knew there was a deeper way to go with the Lord. And here we in the West, very often we will avoid or we do not desire the blessings that come actually from a deeper and more intimate relationship with God. You know, when then we experience the difficulties or the hardships, the things that happen to us, how many Christians do we hear say that? You know, oh, you're experiencing satanic attack. Oh, that's why you're going through this hardship. But that's why you have that problem. It's a satanic attack. Or others might say, well, you know, you could have been rid of that problem long ago if you only had faith. If you had the faith, then God would that lift this problem from you. But, you know, no, I think sometimes we can find it hard to believe that God might actually weaken us to make us more perfect, to resemble him and to be conformed more to his will. He may lay something on us that we really do not desire. He may weaken or wound us. And therein lies the blessing, actually. You know, if there's one thing that weakness or impairment with which we have been afflicted, there's one thing it teaches us, and that's dependence. Dependence upon God. And therein lies the blessing. God's power is demonstrated in the weak and foolish things of the world. And that's the essence of the struggle that we actually have with God. We cannot receive that. We cannot believe that God has the right, the claim on our lives, to do as he sees fit with us. We cannot receive that sometimes. I have a hard time with that. And that's the struggle. That's the wrestling match we have. Things come our way. Things happen to us. Illnesses happen, right? And, you know, there's brothers and sisters, this should not be. We need to pray against this. You know, who are we to say? Absolutely, pray. Absolutely. May God heal us. Absolutely. I'm all for that. That's not what I'm saying. But at a certain time, how do we know? In God's wisdom, he's maybe decided this is what you're going to carry with you now. This is your burden. And we struggle with that he actually has a claim on our life. You know, we think, you have a claim on my life, Lord, as long as you do what I want you to do. Then that's not a claim anymore. He no longer has a claim. You know? And we want to steer our own car. But this is the point. Quite often we recognize and accept this claim only when we've reached a crisis point in our life, a point where we suffer a wound that forces us to finally surrender all to Christ. That's Jacob. Jacob is like, he's like, let go. It's all in the Lord's hands now. You know, he's recognized whatever he has did come from the Lord. And, you know, that's been my testimony in a certain way. In Berlin for 10 years now, I've been struggling. I've been wrestling. And I've been dealing with a lot of things in the church plant over there. And if there's one thing, and I think probably Larry might attest to this, but he's probably a more godly man than I am. But pastors, it's very easy to look at the other churches. It's kind of easy, especially the churches that started after you, that started as a church plant after you, and they're kind of like growing, and they're kind of like, you know, moving in the spirit or whatever. They're like, you know, they're kind of coming, and they're it, you know. And you see your own church, and you see maybe some of the own pastors. You compare yourself to pastors, and you see, you notice the weaknesses then. You begin to notice like, well, I guess I'm not as charming, or I'm not as witty, I'm not as eloquent. He seems to be, has a personality that just matches. He has a passion. He has compassion. He's filled with spirit. We begin to notice those things, and we begin to notice our weaknesses and our things that come to the foreground. And we go, Lord, can you still use me? I'm obviously in the wrong position here. I don't know if I'm any good here for you. And that's been, believe me, I don't think about this every day. But it's just natural, and you do look at your ministry, and even if you don't compare it to others' ministries, you look at your ministry and you go like, am I in the right place? Am I doing the work? I mean, you deal with stuff all the time. I'm hard of hearing. My hearing's gotten worse since I've been in Berlin. And I'm like going, Lord, it's a foreign language. I'm trying to understand the people. Communication is very important if you're a pastor. And you know, all these little things, and you know what? We all have them. We all have the things. It might not sound that real when I say it. It may not sound that important, like a big deal. But you know what? We have all things in our lives, weaknesses that we carry, and we would just wish if the Lord would remove that, I would be doing so much better. And we think, Lord, I would be doing so much better in the ministry for you. Lord, it's about you. Can't you make this better for me so that I can serve you better, right? That's the bargain we want to do. Don't you see where my heart is? Don't you see where my good intentions are? I want to serve you. You know, just make me, you know, witty and charming and eloquent when I'm behind the pulpit so that more people come and more people want to hear your word. But no, it goes the other direction. I'm forgetful. I can't believe how forgetful I'm getting. You know? And everybody will say, well, that's age. No, I found myself in embarrassing situations because of my forgetfulness. And I'm like just so totally embarrassed as a pastor. I'm like going like, is that person still going to, like, man, you can offend people. You can hurt people by doing stuff like, wow, I totally forgot about that. How did I miss that? And so and that's when you go to the Lord. You go, Lord, what's going on here? I thought you put me here. And believe me, I'll tell you one thing. I've been there for 10 years. That's only a testimony to the fact that the Lord called me there. Because on my own terms, if I had made this my own project, then I would have left a long time ago. Because it would have been about me. And I would have said, what a loser you are, Paul. You need to get out of here as fast as possible. And the fact that I'm still there, I just know, just from the very beginning, how he led me there is the only reason why I'm still standing there. And you know what? I need to come to this point. You know, Paul, it's your weaknesses, yeah. But God can maybe use your weaknesses as a blessing. We don't understand that sometimes. We think a pastor should be handsome. He's going to be wearing a suit. Not a hair is going to be out of place. He's going to tell funny stories. He's going to be eloquent. He's going to draw us in. I mean, that's what our image is. And you know, maybe God wants to say, you know what? I got other plans. I want to demonstrate my power in the weak things of this world. We have a guy in our church. He's from Albania. His name is Nari. And when he was 6 years old in Albania, he played with a hand grenade. And the hand grenade went off. And it blew his whole left side away. And it's a miracle, actually, to this day that he's still living. He said a couple times the doctors came to his mom and said, you know what? I think it's just, let him die. I think it's just better. He's not going to make it. And his mom insisted that they continue to try to save his life. And they eventually, he rounded the corner and he survived. But to this day, he's got no left arm, no left leg, and a left eye is gone, and his face is disfigured. But you know what? He's going to die that way. He's going to die that way with this infirmity, like Jacob with his limp. But that's the point. You know what? God is using him. And God is using him in ways that he can't use me. Because Nari, you know, when he comes and talks to somebody about Jesus, you know what? He's vulnerable already. And that disarms people. And that brings people down too. And they just kind of like relax and they can maybe receive what he has to say about Jesus Christ. Versus me, you know, blonde hair, blue eyed, big, kind of aggressive, kind of loud guy comes and wants to talk to you about Jesus. People are like this, first of all. Who are you? What's your business? What's your agenda? You know, because we don't think that way. That's, we think how it should be. You know, Nari is the guy who's left side. You should see the guy. But, you know, he walks by faith every day, and God uses him in ways. I mean, I'm just blown away. The guy has nothing, and the guy is further along than most Christians are that have everything. And we sometimes forget that. We think that, hey, the weakness you have, the wound that you're carrying, is the very thing that God maybe wants to use to reach people. Aren't we blessed by that? Aren't we, like, seen by, like, people that kind of come up and, you know, they don't have it all going and they don't quite play the guitar like you think they should, or, you know, you got this and you got all this criticism, but you know what? Maybe the Lord is just speaking through them. I mean, I was blessed through the worship today. I really was. And I don't know anything about music, and I don't know if these guys were good musicians or bad musicians, but I was blessed by it, and that's all that mattered to me. I'm sure there's going to be some other professional musicians that might say, you know what, these guys, you know, they were a little off key and this and that, and could make some criticism. But you know what, I don't know about that. I just know they loved the Lord, and God was using them, and I was blessed by the worship. That's where we want to be. If I can have you turn to 2 Corinthians 12. I would ask you to do that. 2 Corinthians 12, verses 7 to 10. Time has blown by. I can't believe it. I'm getting to be one of those long-winded preachers. When I first started preaching, I was so scared. I mean, my sermon could have been done in 10 minutes. And now I'm like, I got to cut it back. Wow. Okay, let me read 2 Corinthians 12, verses 7 to 10. This is Paul. Listen to what Paul has to say. He wraps it up very nicely, actually. Because of the surpassing greatness of the revelations, for this reason, to keep me from exalting myself, there was given me a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me. Wow, that doesn't sound too nice. To keep me from exalting myself. Concerning this, I implored the Lord three times that it might leave me. And he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for power is perfected in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, now Paul writes about himself, therefore I will rather boast about my weaknesses so that the power of Christ may dwell in me. Therefore, I am well content with weaknesses, with insults, with distresses, with persecutions, with difficulties for Christ's sake. And that's the key right there. You're doing this for Christ's sake. You need to commit the infirmity, the weakness, the thing that you're dealing with that you can't shake. You need to give that to the Lord and say, Lord, you use it. It's your business. It's your responsibility, especially if you were born with something, right? How many of us? And that's not just a physical flaw. It's a personality trait. Hey, we were all born a certain way, and there's basically nothing that can change us. I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, sin nature can be changed, but you know what I'm saying? Everybody's a little different. We are. That's how God made us, personality-wise. We're different personalities, and we don't like our personalities sometimes, but you know what? That's actually something that God can use for his glory. The thing is, we need it's for Christ's sake. That's how I'm going to live. I'm not going to battle the infirmity. I'm going to give it to the Lord and ask him to bless it, that he might use it. And then he writes in conclusion, this is what Paul writes here, verse 10, for when I am weak, then I am strong. And that's the message right there. You know, here's the thing with Jacob, and here's the thing with us. When we have weaknesses, when we carry infirmities that we really do not want, you know what? Number one, they teach us dependence. You know what? That's what I'm learning. It's hard. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I struggle. I wrestle with the Lord. But you know what? I'm learning it. I need to, and I tell myself, I tell the Lord, I need to learn this. You know, I do not like dependence. Everybody wants to be a self-made man. That's what America's all about, right? Pull yourself up by the bootstraps. You have independence. You have the freedom. Be your own man. Be what you want to be. No, hey, you know what? You got to be what God wants you to be. And here's what he's going to do. He's going to lay a weakness, an infirmity, or some kind of wound on you. And you're going to learn sometimes. That's how you're going to learn. You go, hey, Lord, it's not about me. It's about you. It teaches you dependence. You go to him continually now. Continually. You're forced to seek him first and ask him to guide you. Humility, it keeps you from exalting yourself. How many pastors have we seen? They got membership of 10,000. They're on TV. Everybody loves them. Everybody's raving about their sermons. And next thing you know, they fell. You know, you know what? My prayer is, Lord, let me stay a small church. Keep me on my knees. Let me just be frustrated how weak I am, then be one of those guys. You know what? Because that's how I want to be. Hey, I'll be effective. God will use me then. That's exactly what Paul says, to keep me from exalting myself. The great Paul was a human being, and he recognized, I need a thorn in the flesh so that I will keep from exalting myself. He knows that's the end of his ministry if he exalts himself. Number three, that's the blessing then. That's the blessing. You know, what would you rather? You build up your own kingdom, your own empire, and you can crow and boast about what a great man you are? Or would you rather have the Lord build it for you? And you just recognize, go, wow, that was the Lord. I had nothing to do with that. Trust me, that's the true blessing right there in your life. When you can say, wow, that was the Lord. It had nothing to do with me. That is so cool when you can start experiencing that. It's like the power of God starts opening up things. The power of God leads you into the job that you're supposed to have, or whatever it is, man. He begins to, the knots in your life, the things that can't be solved, he solves it for you, like almost like that, and you're just stunned. But that's the whole point. Then you're not going to boast about yourself, are you? Because you go, I'm a weak, helpless fool. And that was only the Lord. That's the whole point. That's the blessing right there, to see God at work in your life. And I'm convinced that's what Jacob desired and that what he received. He came to that point. It's a spiritual blessing. God at work in your life, using you for his sake and his purposes. And I know for all of us, maybe all of us, I know I, like I said, I've been there, I am there. And we got something, at least one thing, that we've been carrying with us and we just wish we could get rid of it. Maybe it's a physical infirmity. Maybe it's a personality trait, you know, just the way you are. Maybe it's a situation you're in, the circumstances, whatever it is. You find yourself and you go like, hey, I can't get rid of it. Well, you know, maybe you should ask the Lord if it just needs to stay there. And then commit it to him. Just leave it with him and say, Lord, may you use this for your blessing. Whatever my weakness is, you use it and you make out of it what you want to be. And I'm just going to be faithful here following you. And you know, if the other ones are running and they're laying and I'm limping, then I'm limping. And I'm going to be happy with that. And I'm not going to be angry, frustrated about it. I'm just going to do what I've been called to do. And you know what? I think we might be shocked. We might be surprised. Like I say, hey, pray for healing. Pray for resolution. But that's exactly the point where we might start finding resolution and healing is when we've let go. And we're not fighting it anymore. We're not fighting the Lord on it anymore. Like, I'm just going to let go. Hey, God, if this is with me now the rest of my life, so be it. And we might be surprised how quickly things change then, right after that point. But we can't con God. It has to come from the heart. You know, we can do the lip thing and say, oh, I've given all to the Lord. And then God knows the heart. And you're not going to fool him. And that's where we need to get at the point. And just go like, Lord, I'm moving on. I'm going to be content. Like Paul just says, I'm going to be content with weaknesses, insults, distresses, with persecutions and difficulties for Christ's sake. If you lose my life, if you lose your life for my sake, you will gain it. Jesus Christ said, that verse spoke to me when I came back to the Lord. I always knew, lose your life, but do it for him and he will bless you.